All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, August 31st, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a damp 67 degrees, rainy, foggy, and misty here in upstate New York. That's what the weather forecast actually said. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Democratizing Gene Editing Equals DIY Global Biowarfare. And yeah, that's pretty much what it all boils down to. We looked at a whole bunch of disturbing things, and we ended the show reading an article. And actually, I think we might have spent almost the whole show reading this article with little side detours every few minutes. But we read an article by the Atomic Bulletin of Sciences, I believe, looking at how close we are to the complete and utter lunacy of genetic engineering being a weapon of mass destruction, and how it's been democratized across this planet to the point where there is no control. We had Clapper, the head of IA, I believe he is, going up in front of Congress, raising the red flag after 60,000 copies of CRISPR. And we established the fact that once CRISPR is sent out, it can be copied as many times as you need it. So they sent out this company called Agene, 60,000 copies of CRISPR, to be able to democratize gene editing anywhere in the world by anybody without any controls whatsoever, including foreign actors and foreign governments, to be able to cause destruction. There were a few stories back a while ago, and I dug these up. We read these when they first came out, but it's made me laugh. Fusion Magazine has a picture of an Easy Bake Oven up top. It's got a couple petri dishes, a beaker, and a pipette laying in front of it, and it says Easy Bake DNA across the front. That's pretty much it. Titled Inside the Garage Labs of DIY Gene Hackers. Remember, they all did it in their mommy's basement, garage, or kitchen. Whose hobbies may terrify you? This is from March 29, 2016. Let's just establish how scary the future with CRISPR looks, despite the fact that we have MIT and Harvard and the Broad Institute and the Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering and George Church all sitting around saying how this is going to remake the world. It's going to cure us all of cancer. It's going to do all kinds of great things with our food and soon to be CRISPRing humans, gene therapies. When the future of genetic engineering arrived on Sebastian Kokiboa's doorstep, it was affixed to the back of a postcard from Austria with a little bit of packing tape. And this is exactly what Agene was doing. Kokiboa is a 25-year-old college dropout, and that's got to make you feel warm and fuzzy, whose primary interest is tinkering with plant genetics in a lab he cobbled together from eBay. Ding. The lab is located in the spare bedroom of his parents' lavish apartment. Where? Oh, in Long Island. Remember, Long Island's back bedroom turned into a gene lab by a college dropout who is interested in plant genetics and buys equipment off of eBay. A few months ago, an internet friend from an online biohacking forum had sent him his lab's latest edition. Attached to that postcard was CRISPR-Cas9. Oh, how amazing is that? So he's got some hacker friends on the internet who's sending him gene editing kits to do who knows what, uncontrolled, to, I don't know, whatever he wants. I mean, there are no rules, guys. There are no rules. Deposited onto a flimsy fragment of filter paper and wrapped in plastic, it looked like a tab of acid. But inside that crude packaging was the key to an incredibly precise DNA editing technology that will revolutionize the world. CRISPR, a memorable acronym for the mouthful clustered regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats, and that's going to be on the test, guys, gives scientists an unprecedented ability to decrypt and reorder genes, opening up a dazzling and terrifying universe of possibilities. And remember, we had talked about George Church, that interview we had listened to by him, discussing how CRISPR, when it first appeared in 2013, actually was a killing machine before it was anything else. And I actually cut that little snippet out yesterday, put it into the notes of the show. I'm going to read it. It says, it seemed like CRISPR might be adaptable to turning it from a killing machine, and this is out of his transcript of that interview, into an editing machine. But that transition didn't occur, or it wasn't public at least until 2013. It is a molecular machine. Guys, it was a killing machine. Zip and unzip, unzip and zip. And the first thing that they did was unzip. They didn't know how to zip stuff back in. And like I've said before, everything is a double-edged sword, because now that this technology is out globally in anyone and everyone's hands to be able to tinker with and mess with the building blocks of life, it's got to make you wonder, not everyone is going to be, like I said a few times already, rescuing little kittens and puddles. There are a lot of people who have this megalomania disorder where they want to rule the world. They want to be gods. They want to inflict pain and terror on the world. And, you know, I'm not talking about our federal government always screaming terror under every bed and in every closet. I'm talking about there are some real sick people out there. Trust me, I know some of them. There are some really sick people out there who just have a real problem having any type of empathy. They're called psychopaths. We have a real problem in trying to see the world in the correct framework. There are a lot of people that think that they should be the ones who wipe the planet clean of the vermin that we call humans. And that's what concerns me. There are no checks and balances on this. And every lunatic on the planet who has some sort of desire to create some real issues. Like I said the other day, we used to think back in the 80s that getting blown up by a nuke by Russia was going to wipe the planet clean. And we discovered after Chernobyl and then after a triple meltdown in Fukushima that that isn't quite the case. We've had nuclear explosions around this planet for 50 years. And a friend and I actually looked at some of those deposition maps where the radioactivity landed after each of the named bombs were blown up in the southwestern desert. And you know, a lot of that radiation ended up right here in the Great Lakes. As I was running around in the 70s in bare feet, jumping in rain puddles, drinking rainwater out of the sky, eating snow in the wintertime. Yeah, you know what? Those are probably radioactive. And it didn't kill us, which is surprising, because I would have guessed it. But being able to gene edit bacteria and viruses and mix and match across plant, animal, and insect kingdoms and have bacteria produce substances, whether it be for good or evil. We saw biofuels. We're going to look at that. We've seen Synlogix being able to produce drugs out of bacteria inside people. How long is it going to be before somebody genetically engineers a bacteria that causes your brain to explode? Or, you know, I don't know. Who knows? All I'm saying is never before seen is going to become the new normal, as opposed to the once in a lifetime situation. Anyway, back to the story about the DIY Easy Bake DNA in the Long Island back bedroom. So CRISPR gives scientists an unprecedented ability to decrypt and reorder genes, opening up a dazzling and terrifying universe of possibilities. This year, a top national security official, and that was Clapper, that was that story we were reading, called gene editing a weapon of mass destruction, along with nuclear detonation, chemical weapons, and cruise missiles, because it could be used to create, quote, potentially harmful biological agents or products. CRISPR, and this is what I've been saying, is every sci-fi future or dystopian sci-fi future that we have ever dreamt about or feared, designer babies, unlimited energy, and the end of genetic diseases like Alzheimer's, or yes, the super soldiers with big pointy teeth, laser vision, and wings. And that was my addition. Researchers have used CRISPR to make wheat resistant to damaging blight. They've also altered 62 pig genes so they could, theoretically, we talked about this, grow human organs inside of them for transplant. And they edited a human embryo to repair a gene that caused a fatal blood disorder. And we also, since then, March, they now are looking at CRISPRing humans to get rid of cancer by CRISPRing their T cells to go attack and destroy. Again, that experiment should have been happening in August in China. And today's the last day of August, so it'll be interesting to see if that ever happens. And potentially in December at Penn U. But the biggest bonus in the eyes of the DIY biohacker is that it makes at-home genetic experimentation astonishingly accessible. Now, who in their right mind would let their kid in the back bedroom do at-home genetic experimentation? Especially if you're a college dropout who never quite finished biology 101. I mean, what is the insanity? This is beyond insane. This should be stopped immediately. There should be no CRISPR on the open market. There should be a kill switch. Don't they know about kill switches? If the genome was a book and you wanted to sneak a sentence into the middle and make it look like it was there the whole time, CRISPR can do that, says Koki Bina, vibrating with enthusiasm. Oh my God, as he held between his thumb and forefinger a plastic-wrapped Pandora's box. CRISPR, which arrived just out of nowhere on the science scene in 2012, has made genetic engineering simpler, faster, and cheaper, and galvanized the movement of DIY scientists around the globe who want to try their hand at genetically modifying plants, insects, animals, and someday maybe even humans. Yes, in the not-too-distant future. David Ishii, a 30-year-old Mississippi resident who never attended college, first started doing at-home experiments after seeing kits to make glowing plants online. He says, my little lab is in my shed. Oh, my God. Back bedrooms and sheds. So what's it going to take to be doing it in a cave in Afghanistan? I mean, seriously. Somehow we managed to have dialysis machines running in caves in Afghanistan. These guys can do it in a shed in Mississippi. He says, I have all the typical equipment and chemicals for genetic engineering, and I built it for less than $1,000. CRISPR, he said, will vastly expand the kind of experiments he is able to do at home. Software like DeskGen, and this was a software in the programming language I was talking about yesterday, that makes reusable components and assemblies out of DNA strands so you can mix and match traits. Software like DeskGen already allows anyone to easily design custom DNA sequences and then have them delivered to to your doorstep for a few $100. CRISPRs will allow Ishii to then insert those genes into a host organism with relative ease. He says CRISPR is great because it's simple and it's cheap to use for precision genomic insertion, addition, or deletion with lots of different kinds of cells. And that gives me a lot of new options. And up until now, all the genetic edits I've made have been limited to plasmids and unguided genomic insertions, but that limits the kind of cells that I can work with and the types of work that I can do. When synthetic biology's most prominent scientists gathered last year in Napa, and this is where they gathered to debate the ethics of creating genetically engineered humans and, in the future, synthetic human genomes, Nobel Prize-winning molecular biologist David Baltimore lamented in his open remarks that the simplicity of CRISPR has been overhyped. He says it is not something that you can do in a garage. Well, I guess he might have been wrong. Last year, a former NASA researcher raised more than $65,000 on Indiegogo to create a DIY CRISPR kit, suggesting in a YouTube video that his NASA lab could be recreated on a kitchen table. And this month, GenSpace, a community DIY bio lab in Brooklyn, New York, began offering CRISPR workshops, spurred by the demands of a CRISPR craze among DIY biologists. And guys, talk about a brave new world. I mean, we're doing this in sheds, in back bedrooms. We got DIY education workshops for CRISPR. It's out of hand. Cioba is currently plotting, yeah, good word, his first CRISPR experiment, knocking out the gene in an Oxalis cornorchii, aka sourgrass, that can cause kidney stones for people and animals who eat too much of it. Willy Wonka, he told me, was his inspiration. And sadly, interesting, they mentioned Willy Wonka. Gene Wilder died, I believe it was yesterday, the day before, at 83. I loved Gene Wilder. He was a great actor. And he just, there was something about him. I just always really enjoyed him, his work. And Gilda Radner is very sad. So they're both gone now. And Wonka. I read yesterday Gene Wilder actually had Alzheimer's and tried to hide it from everyone. Wonka may have been a little nuts. That's what I liked about him. I like nutty people. But he dedicated his life to engineering fantastical new things to give to the world. I want to make white plants, blue plants, glowing plants, plants that when you touch them, they curl up, all kinds of things. Kikaboa says from his back bedroom at his parents' Long Island apartment, his current obsession is genetically engineering a blue rose. None of the other blue roses on the market, he says, are truly cerulean blue. But his ultimate goal is to be taken seriously as a scientist. And see, that's the thing. There's a lot of hubris involved here. There are a lot of people who want to get published, who want to make a name for themselves, who want to do something to make themselves important. That's what frightens me. This is a tool of megalomaniacs. He wants to make useful discoveries, he says, engineering interesting plants and publishing his work. Ding, ding. And then getting some nice, expensive job somewhere as CEO, I'm sure. Or creating his own startup somewhere and making a bazillion dollars. Just as a bunch of engineers and computer hobbyists in a garage ushered in the modern era of personal computing, it could very well be biohackers like Sikiboba, however you say his name, that leads the way to the future of genetic engineering. And that is, if somebody doesn't try to stop them first. I think we need to stop them. I'm going to Put out the call to stop DIY genetic engineering in your mommy's back bedroom and your shed in Mississippi and your Afghanistanian cave. Because it's absolute utter insanity and will lead to the destruction of this planet. You know, we're worried about mad scientists in dark, scary labs funded by government money, all in the name of bioterror and keeping you safe. But I think we should be more worried about the people with half an education who don't really know what they're doing. You taught themselves how to hack crap, and now they're doing it without any type of laboratory protections, without any type of biosecurity. I mean, I haven't even seen biosecurity in the real labs, let alone in your shed in Mississippi. Says accidents happen all the time in science. Well, of course they do. You know, I published those stories about the DOD and the CDC, and I guess there was also another big incident with the FDA in anthrax or smallpox. I mean, it happens all the time. People who just don't pay attention to rules and don't follow chains of command. But sometimes it's the result of being sloppy. Like that time drunk physicist discovered that red wine increases superconductivity. I don't remember that one. I'll have to look that one up. Sometimes it's just good fortune. And as with the discovery of CRISPR, researchers in the 1980s and again in 2012 were looking for something else entirely different when they made discoveries that led to the development of gene editing. And you know, that's what we talked about way back when in the 80s and then on the market in the 90s. They already were genetically modifying food and making food vaccines that we didn't know about. And some of them actually made it to market, like that Flavor Saver tomato, without any type of labeling, because hey, who needed to know that they had done anything to our food? But it's this kind of doomsday hand-wringing that has caused some to wonder, like me, whether DIY biology should require licensing and regulation, or perhaps be stopped altogether. At a collaborative biohacking panel that this author attended at the technology conference in South by Southwest in Texas, March of 2016, a woman who introduced herself as a PhD scientist stood up to pronounce her horror that amateurs were performing synthetic biology experiments at home. Now, I'm sorry, I don't have a PhD, but I've stood up and said that more than enough, I think. It is horrifying. Lunacy. Absolute, utter lunacy. And this PhD scientist at South by Southwest says, quote, "This scares the living daylights out of me. There are careful rules in labs. How do you make sure people are following the same rules in their garage?" And exactly, that is my point. Sarah Richardson, a panelist and molecular biologist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. And by the way, down the side of YouTube, where I had my show queued up yesterday, there was an hour-long interview with scientists from Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory from just a few months ago discussing biowarfare, the futures of biowarfare and gene editing. And I don't know, we'll have to take a look. Maybe I'll air that one for you guys on Friday. I'll have to see. I'm not done listening to it yet, but it was really good. Anyway, the Sarah Richardson, a panelist and molecular biologist at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, responded that it is not easy to cook up a pathogen, so don't worry about it, Johnny, even for a scientist with a PhD. Well, I guess the guy in his shed and the guy in mommy's back bedroom proved them wrong. She says, "Frankly, I am less scared of people in their garages than I am of people in institutions." Yes, and places like China. Don't forget, there is a new arms race, and this arms race does not have to do with nuclear weapons. This arms race has to do with pathogens and the recreation of the biowarfare programs that never ended in the first place. They just went undercover under the guise of creating vaccines to protect us from some future biowarfare attack. Besides, this panelist and molecular biologist at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab says some rewards are worth the risk. Nobody, she says, is going to make a pathogen with E. coli and CRISPR. And even if they wanted to, it would be easier to just go to Chipotle and get the pathogen itself. You know, I mentioned that. Like, how weird is it that they're using E. coli to do all the splicing and dicing, and we had all these E. coli breakouts everywhere? They don't know where it came from. Oh my God, there's all these bacteria that are now antibiotic resistant. We don't know where they came from either. It must be you're using too many antibiotics. And Dr. Huber says it's because we're spraying too much glyphosate. But it's got to be concerning. It's got to be concerning. All the scientists at that South by Southwest told this author not to worry about it. Other scientists I spoke to, he did, echoed the insistence that my fears are misplaced. There are limitations to what DIY can actually pull off. And you might be able to order custom DNA sequences on the internet, but there is no Amazon yet for human embryos or YouTube videos explaining how to implant them into humans. You still need to master the technical know-hows of what to splice and where. Now, I want to go back to the story we didn't finish reading yesterday. And this was from this Atomic Bulletin of Scientists, How Genetic Editing Became a National Security Threat. And this story was referenced in that story we just finished with James Clapper, Director of National Intelligence, giving testimony to the Senate Armed Services Committee in February of 2016, titled Worldwide Threat Assessment. He says, so where's the threat? Well, for starters, the low cost and growing availability of these powerful new techniques, speaking of CRISPR, means that untrained personnel, like Johnny in Mommy's Back Bedroom, will inevitably gain access to them. And the lack of experience, disregard for codes of ethics, and ignorance of appropriate precautions all but guarantee dangerous outcomes. So, you know, we have PhDs, smarty pants, scientists at Livermore Labs telling people at South by Southwest, don't worry about it, because it's way too difficult for DIYs to do anything dangerous. But we have the head of National Intelligence coming out before the Senate armed, what do they call themselves? National Armed Services Committee. Saying how this is actually a national threat because exactly what we've been saying. There are no regulations. There isn't proper training. There are no ethics. There's no oversight. There's no anything. And this is a real danger. Such actors, which I had to laugh that they used that word, will also not have the traditional oversight and institutional structure designed to ensure proper use of the technology for legitimate science and not for rogue or unguided and unsupervised experiments. Trying to put this genome genie back in the bottle, I had to laugh, they keep using all my words here, would be self-defeating. And it would fail in the long run. Well, yeah, we got a genetically modified Godzilla genie that's already out of the bottle, and he's too big to put back in, because they gene spliced him to grow really fast. So you can't stuff him back into the bottle, and he's out everywhere now. This technology has already been widely shared. Yes, everywhere, 60,000 copies to start. taped to a postcard and sent all over the globe, and the excitement surrounding it and all of its possibilities is far too great. However, democratization, ding, will result in more access to this technology by individuals and groups that do not have the proper training. No institutional biosafety committee will govern the work at many of these labs or these do-it-yourself facilities. Let's read that again. No institutional biosafety committee. I knew it, guys. I knew that there were no controls. This is very, very bad. Will govern the work at many of these labs or do-it-yourself facilities. And they will certainly not be encumbered by the dual-use research of concern policy, which only pertains to research funded by the U.S. government, right? Because it's all privately funded by either rogue agents or rich tech billionaires. And hence the dangerous proliferation window at the core of James Clapper's testimony. In biotechnology, new laws and regulations have typically come after scientific advances outstrip the existing rules. For example, it took dangerous gain-of-function experiments with influenza transmissibility to spur Obama to develop the dual use research of concern policy for institutional oversight. This policy now governs government-sponsored research on 15 particular agents and toxins and 7 categories of experiments, with the hope of guarding against developments that enhance the susceptibility of host populations or increase the transmissibility of pathogens. So was that after they published the not one but 2 ways to make the bird flu 99.99% virulent to kill everybody that it infects? Because they did that. They also found a way to make the 1918 killer flu way more virulent to kill more people as well, and published that research. But hey, it was all in the name of science, so don't worry about that. Still, much can and should be done at all levels to address the potential threat posed by genome editing. International laws and treaties, including the UN Security Council Resolution 1540, which governs the proliferation of WMDs, should be strengthened to reflect the danger posed by unregulated gene editing. The Biological Weapons Convention, and that is the name of that agreement I never remember, that Nixon finally inked in 1972, where shortly thereafter they went to Plum Island and Fort Detrick and supposedly destroyed a lot of those pathogens, but we're going to maintain a defensive posture in making vaccines to protect us all from pathogens. But the Biological Weapons Convention should continue to emphasize the importance of national laws, policies, and regulations, with a particular eye on the dangers of misusing synthetic biology. And careful what you ask for, global biosurveillance, ding, ding, and forensics programs should be strengthened to look for evidence of abuse. And the policy should be pushed down to smaller labs, individuals, and even those commercial entities that might be promoting gene editing capabilities as measures that should be responsibly implemented for the good of society. And we're going to look at that. There are a lot of commercial entities that are already involved in this. And remember, we talked about this in regards to GMO foods. You know, each of these big manufacturers have scientists in labs that are making their own insanity and putting it into your food. And a GMO is the same as a standard tomato or an apple or a potato. And they don't need to go through any type of FDA or USDA approval because it's already been rubber stamped. But we have each of these labs and all these different commercial companies creating biological edits, I don't know, gene editing things in the back room. And no, and putting patents on it, no less. And nobody is watching the hen house. Authorities should continue to strengthen biorisk management, which considers biosafety, biosecurity, and bioethics around the globe. And that's exactly what I said. Where is the level for biosecurity that's being utilized with the stuff? Because there isn't. There is nobody watching what is happening to these pathogens. And perhaps it is even now time to convene a conference to consider the implications of this powerful new biotechnology, you think? Above all, the inclusion of genome editing as a worldwide mass threat should serve as an important wake-up call. Yeah. I mean, it's already way out of the bottle. Way out of the bottle. The proliferation of this technology now and in the future has the potential to dramatically alter human existence. In good ways as well as bad. And if we marshal it properly, they say, it could lead to improvements in the quality of life for peoples across the globe. But if we don't, it could imperil life itself. So I'm going to applaud the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists because they shared not only a lot of my thoughts, not only a lot of my conclusions, but also some exact phrases and words that I've used. I think we're on the same page there. And it should concern you. I'm just a nobody sitting here reading this stuff, digesting it, trying to understand and looking at the future implications. The fact that I figured it out. But it took a Senate Armed Services Committee and the head of the National Intelligence to come out and actually say something to raise a red alert for even one person to pay attention. We got scientists out at South by Southwest, which is a technology conference every year held in Austin, Texas, saying, nah, gene editing, schmean editing, it doesn't matter. Nobody could do anything dangerous. These scientists are lunatics, okay? This should not be out there for any Joe Schmo or federal governments, DARPA, Sprinkle, labs, to be able to mess with any of this stuff at all. I don't really see the benefit. I mean, maybe you want to step right up and get some shape-shifting immune system injected into you. Hey, be my guest, but let's not let it be transmissible to me or my child. You won't be able to reproduce either, so you cannot pollute the genetic makeup of the human race. And you're isolated behind plexiglass in some sort of level 4 biosecurity facility. Hey, then do whatever you want. But if they're going to let these people run around creating this stuff and run around in the wild and reproduce with undefiled people, then there's a real problem. If you're going to be able to pass down modified genetic traits, and you can, in the future, modify just about anything, splice and dice, push a button, and create life, and mix and match, there's a big problem. All right, we mentioned Craig Venter yesterday. I just wanted, for history's sake, to be able to read this press release, May 20th, 2010, for immediate release. First self-replicating synthetic bacterial cell produced, and I remember when this happened, constructed by the J. Craig Venter Institute researchers, and he's another rich tech billionaire. Researchers at the J. Craig Venter Institute, a not-for-profit genomic research organization, published results today, May 20th, 2010, describing the successful construction of the first self-replicating synthetic bacterial cell. Guys, this was already 6 years ago. The team synthesized the 1.08 million base pair chromosome of a modified mycoplasma mycodeen's genome. And the synthetic cell is called Mycoplasma mycodeen's JCVI-SYN1.0, and that must be its patent name. JCVI stands for the J. Craig Venter Institute. And it is proof of a principle that genomes can be designed by a computer, chemically made in the laboratory, and then transplanted into a recipient cell to produce a new self-replicating cell controlled only by the synthetic genome. Now, if there was ever a frightening sentence, that's one of them. We're going to read this one more time. This synthetic cell that the J. Craig Venter Institute created and announced in a press release on May 20th, 2010 is called Mycoplasma mycodeen's JCVI-SYN1.0, and it is the proof of principle that genomes can be designed by the computer, chemically made in the lab, and transplanted into a recipient cell to produce a new self-replicating cell controlled only by the synthetic genome. The research was published in the May 20th edition of Science Express and will appear in an upcoming print issue of Science. According to Dr. Smith, who worked on this project, quote, "With this first synthetic bacterial cell and the new tools and technologies we've developed to successfully complete this project." And remember, 2010 was before today's CRISPR hit the marketplace. He continues, "We now have the means to dissect the genetic instruction set of bacterial cells to see and understand how this all really works." Now, in the meantime, let's fast forward. August 23rd, 2016, engineered bacterium turns carbon dioxide into methane fuel. I mean, there are so many examples now that synthetic gut bacteria, Synlogix, they already have bacteria that can produce medications and go in and tamp down on inflammation inside your gut. But don't worry about that. Bill and Melinda Gates sprinkle funding with MIT, spun it out into an IPO and have their own little company. But the Department of Energy, we discovered, who produces the synthetic biology report for Congress, has been working on synthetic biology for a long time. Engineered bacterium turns carbon dioxide into methane fuel. Oh my God, we can cure climate change with greenhouse gas that's even worse than carbon dioxide. Scientists have engineered a bacterium that can take carbon dioxide out of the air, of course, our waste byproduct and the food for plants. And turn it into a fuel in one single enzymatic step. This process draws on sunlight to produce methane and hydrogen instead of a bacterium Rhodopseudomonas palustris, in essence reversing combustion. Reversing combustion. Wait a minute. Isn't fire like one of the elementals on Earth? We've been able to reverse an elemental on Earth. Guys, I've told you this is going to be upside down world in our future. And there is no doubt in my mind. And they even mentioned this is going to change the way the world works. And it sure is. These engineered bacteria could guide scientists toward better carbon neutral biofuels, all about getting that carbon quotient down to zero, per Billy Gates at the TEDx. Researchers published their results yesterday, so it must have been August 22nd, 2016, in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Co-author Caroline Harwood, a professor of microbiology at the University of Washington, said the report blossomed from her work studying an enzyme called nitrogenase. We're really excited in the enzyme nitrogenase because it does phenomenally difficult reactions, she says, and in nature. This enzyme serves as a catalyst to help certain bacteria turn inert atmospheric nitrogen gas into a reactive ammonia in a process called nitrogen reduction. This enzyme uses adenosine triphosphate, ATP, which is the energy of your cell, a compound that serves as the energy currency. But without this enzyme, the nitrogen reduction reaction has a huge energy barrier, and it rarely occurs on its own. But researchers wondered if they tweaked nitrogenase to work with other stable and inert molecules, could they make a change? Some of her collaborators managed to isolate and alter the nitrogenase to use the most oxidized form of carbon, and that is carbon dioxide, as its starting material and produce the most reduced form of carbon, and that is methane. We wanted to see if we could get an actual living organism to do this conversion. How wonderful is that? And Daniel Lesser, an associate professor in the Department of Biological Sciences at the University of Arkansas, who was not involved in the study, said that these findings chalk out a clear pathway to produce methane, which is a major component of natural gas from living organisms. Put on a seatbelt, people. We're just going to have little bacteria inside of our engines pooping out methane to power our future vehicles. This is a story that came out August 19th. Scientists are close to rewriting the genetic code of life. Oh, goody. 62,000 DNA changes later, geneticists have made a step forward in recoding the genome as we know it, replacing 62,214 DNA base pairs in a synthetic E. coli genome. Recoding genomes so extensively could lead to the development of organisms that are resistant to viruses, and could even allow biologists to code for all new synthetic amino acids. Essentially, it will allow us to reprogram life. It's not easy, but we can re-engineer life at profound scales, even something as fundamental as the genetic code, says Peter Carr, a bioengineer at MIT not involved with the study. To understand what the researchers have done, we first have to understand how DNA works. DNA and its four base pairs, ATCG, are translated into RNA, where the code is arranged in triplets, and each code for a specific amino acid, which are the cell's building blocks the cell should use. Almost all life shares a common genetic code, says one of the researchers. For example, the genetic sequencing, AGG, means the same thing for almost all organisms, from your cells to plant cells to yeast cells. But there are 64 possible triplets, or condens, and only 20 types of amino acids that exist in nature. And this means that three or four condens might encode one amino acid, and there's overlap. For example, CCC also encodes for proline, as does CCG. And the cell treats these codons in pretty much the same way. Harvard researchers, which interestingly, they're talking to MIT and Harvard researchers, which is where all this is going on. Remember the Broad Institute and the Weiss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering, that has DARPA funding, by the way. Harvard researchers, and that's the Broad Institute, $34 million to create DNA manufacturing. Harvard University researchers have now removed some of this overlap in E. coli by changing 62,214 base pairs and removing 7 of the 64 codon types across 3,548 of E. coli's genes. It is a bit surprising to see how plastic the genome could be, says Patrick Kai, a synthetic biologist at the University of Edinburgh in the UK, who was not involved with this work. It is also very exciting to see that these technologies, such as computational design, designing it on a computer, as well as de novo synthesis and assembly, and a wide range of phenotyping assays, are now mature enough to support genome refactoring. That's like creating genomes at this scale. Of course, they have a lot of work to do in testing for all these artificial genes and then combine them with recoded genome to create one organism. But this is an interesting step. In a world where CRISPR and the genetic modification of human embryos are about to make a big impact, this is arguably the largest and most radical genome engineering project, says George Church. Ding, ding, ding. George Church of the Broad Institute that works with MIT and Harvard, who organized the secret meeting with 115 geneticists and biologists about whether or not they should create the synthetic human genome. Yes, that George Church. We've talked about 23andMe collecting genetic samples from people for $199. You can find out where your ancestry comes from. Them working with the National Institute of Health as part of the cohort program to, of course, put all of our DNA into a database and help cure diseases and find new medications. And then 23andMe spinning out their DNA database to create a new company to create drugs and genetically engineered bacteria and things of that nature to create drugs utilizing your DNA. 23andMe sells data for drug research. Remember, she is the ex-wife of Google's founder, Sergey Brin, and they actually mentioned that in here. The consumer genetic testing startup has amassed one of the world's largest DNA databases, and now it is sifting through it for clues to new drugs. Welcome to you, says the genetic test kit that 23andMe will send to your home. Pay $199, spit in a tube, and in several weeks, you will get a peek into your DNA. Do you have a gene for blonde hair? Which of these 36 disease risks could you pass on to a child? Run by entrepreneur Ann Wosicki, the ex-wife of Google founder Sergey Brin, and until last year, 23andMe was housed alongside the Googleplex in California, which I did not know that. The company has created a test that has been attacked by regulators and embraced by the curious public. And it remains 9 years after its introduction, the only one of its kind sold directly to consumers. 23andMe has managed to amass a collection of DNA information of about 1.2 million people, which last year began to prove its value when the company revealed that it had sold access to the data to more than 13 drug companies. And one such company called Genentech anteed up $10 million for a look at the genes of people with Parkinson's disease. That means 23andMe is monetizing DNA, rather the way Facebook makes money from your likes. And what is more is that it gets its customers to pay for that privilege. That idea so appeals to investors that they have valued the still unprofitable company at over $1 billion for 23andMe. Money follows data. And it takes a lot of labor and capital to get that information in a form that is useful and into a database. The company almost didn't survive to build its database. No, but then they partnered with the National Institute of Health, and that got rid of all that. 2013, the U.S. government forced 23andMe's flagship health test off the market when it charged in one of its angriest letters the Food and Drug Administration has ever sent to a private company that the company's gene predictions were inaccurate and dangerous for those who might not fully understand its results. But don't worry about it. For now, 23andMe's biobank, is that what they're going to call it? Water will be white, blue gold, and DNA information will be called a biobank, is the world's largest repository of DNA samples that also contains extensive health information willingly provided by customers. Checked that box and paid their $199, who answered survey questions like, do you like cilantro? And have you ever had cancer? And 23andMe says that its customers supply it with as many as 2 million new facts every single week. What's the insanity in that? And if you can even believe it, so I see a story the other day, contact sales, try it for free, Google's new cloud platform called Google Genomics. What are the chances it was housed right next door to 23andMe, Sergey Brin's ex-wife? And now Google has their own cloud-based genomics access. Big genomic data is here today with petabytes, rapidly growing to exabytes. And through our extensions to the Google Cloud platform, you can apply these same technologies that power Google Maps to power your genomics database and create mad science gone mad on Earth. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. It is Wednesday, so there is all kinds of good radio tonight. Josh is live at 6 as well. And Anti-Media live at 11. All right, guys, have an awesome Wednesday, and I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.